Hey, Karsten.
Hello, Sean.
Good to be here.
Time for our quarterly update again. Great to see you.
I enjoy our quarterly updates. Those are fun.
Absolutely. And as usual, we will structure it in the three parts we talk about typically, which are more the client, the buyer side, the vendor side, what's happening with all the software vendors, and then the investor side. And I think with that, we have a good structure. And I would say let's get started right away.
Yeah.
Maybe starting with the users of data analytics technologies. What are you seeing these days? What's hot?
You know, I think a lot of users are turning their attention to a couple of topics. One is data foundational technologies to better participate in all of the cool things around AI. I think AI has been a forcing function to kind of alert the end user community to where they have gaps in their data foundation, gaps in how ready they are to have data available for AI, especially as people turn their attentions to exciting tech like Gen AI and even agentic AI. Agents are very popular in the space right now. So both of those things seem to be pretty prevalent. I know here at BARC, we're getting inquiries from end users who are looking for new tools and solutions to build up that foundation. So it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. We just started a survey, by the way, on the topic of data management for AI or preparing data for AI. Important topic. And I'm personally involved in some projects where it's really around data integration for AI. What I find interesting, it goes two ways. One is that AI is increasingly used to make data integration in general more efficient or effective, but mostly efficiency. So it's like using Gen AI, for example, for mapping purposes, trying to find out what is the right field in the target database to map data to. Or I just set an example in the SAP context. So there are several hundred views in a data sphere system. And if you want to find out which one is the right one, you have to map your data to. Then I just heard from a service provider that basically mapped the or put the documentation as a rack into an LLM. And now the LLM gives you the recommendation where to map the data to. And so stuff like that is happening. But on the other side, it's also obviously that AI brings new requirements. For example, now you have to get data into a vector database, for example, which is definitely a completely new requirement for, I would say, 99% of organizations because you didn't have that before. So I think it's quite exciting. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, I agree. I think, we've moved pretty quickly over the last 6 months from companies trying to understand what RAG was about and how they could bring enterprise information into their large language models. And now it's becoming, I think, almost commonplace. And I think the vendor community is doing an excellent job of making the technological hurdle kind of disappear. They're putting frameworks for this in place, almost drag and drop type interfaces where an enterprise client customer can take internal information and drag it into that framework to enhance the knowledge and the context inside a model. So it's kind of cool stuff. I'm not surprised that we're seeing these things because we knew that this year would be the year of putting frameworks and best practices around how to leverage these new flavors of AI, especially Gen AI. And I'm really glad to see that the users are embracing it. So it's fun stuff.
Yeah. And the second topic you mentioned also resonates very well with me. Agentic AI is the new thing. I just did my keynote for the Data Festival online that we just did. On that specific topic. And for me, it's really shifting this attention from, let's say, singular models or use cases to the question, how can we increase the efficiency of processes? And for many organizations, that's really now the goal for the AI or specifically Gen AI implementation. I saw this shifting. Let's say a year ago, everyone was searching for this killer use case. They called it the killer use case, like the one that brings multi-million more revenue or saves you tons of cost. And now this has shifted. And now I think many organizations say, hey, maybe we don't, they'll never find it, because most didn't. And but actually having small increases in productivity across the organization for many, many people in many processes, actually that is providing real value to us. And agentic, I think, is really addressing this specific thing, because now instead of like building a model that you implement in a process at a specific a touch point in a way or point, where then obviously you can already provide value, you know, you basically try to run the whole process with an AI, or at least partly automated. And that shifts, again, the attention to workflows, to processes, and to increased automation. And I think that's an interesting next step now.
I agree. I know that process automation has always been a key value driver for AI. The question that we get from end users the most is, where do I start with AI? How do I bring AI in? And for a little bit there, the big doorway everybody walked through was, well, I'll put a smart bot or an agent in my web page. And that's how people started that journey. But now it's getting more interesting and more pragmatic. And agentic AI is giving people a low risk pathway to infusing important processes or customer interactions with AI in a smart way. I think it's almost humorous right now with the vendors here. We get to go to a lot of events. The first vendor I heard talk about agents said, hey, we have six of them and they're really good. The next one I heard, they had 20, and several of the big vendors have announced we have 50, we have 100. One of the big vendors in the space sort of re-nicknamed their event with the word agents in it so that they could make the point that they are 100% in on that topic. And it brings up, and I'm curious about your ideas on this. I think in a year from now, when we're talking, a lot of our end user customers are going to have hundreds of agents in their environment. And I'm getting very curious about how they're going to deploy them and manage them and monitor them and score their efficiency. I have an article half written here, Carson, on my desk called The Agents of Chaos. And it's just a little bit of a joke on, I think, at some point, if we don't have the right framework around agents, it is going to get chaotic. But I think it's very interesting and very valuable right now.
Yeah, I agree. And as usual with new things, governance is not the first thought you have. And yep, that's exactly what will come, what will happen typically. And then, yeah, you have to try to figure it out. Often it's better to think about it first or upfront, and then put your initiatives already in some kind of framework, but we see how that goes. But I agree. And I mean, there's still many open questions, yeah, and also some general questions to address, like how do we address this increasing automation on a general sense? Yeah, because basically it's also decision automation. And so there will be less human control. And we have to think about, yeah, what does that mean? And where do we want the human in the loop? Yeah? And how do we manage all that? So I agree. There are lots of interesting but often open questions. But very elegantly, you moved us to the second segment, which is the vendors. And I think it's also funny that the vendors are trying to beat each other in how many agents they have now. And if I see some of the use cases, I have to say it's a bit RPA on steroids. Yeah. So it's very, let's say, very simple process automations. Often it's very simple things happening, actually. But still, let's take it as a first step. And then we see how things are progressing here. But it's surely it's a trend. Second thing I have to observe, Sean, is that it feels a little bit like Groundhog Day. Yeah? So every time we meet here, we talk about the same thing on the vendor side because it's still layoffs. It's still, focus on profitability. Do you agree? Do you feel the same?
Yeah, from the North American perspective, certainly. We continue to see small kind of optimized reorgs and RIFs. I think American companies are choosing right now to do that in smaller numbers because it helps keep it off the radar in a way. We have reporting laws here in the U.S. that if a certain number of people are being laid off from your organization, it triggers some compliance and reporting. We're seeing some of the mid-sized companies making sure that they're staying underneath that compliance level so that they can make these changes. And it is. It seems to be happening as much with what are profitable and growing firms, as well as firms that we as analysts know are struggling a little bit for traction. The latter is one that you would certainly expect to see it on. It's a little demoralizing to see the constant pressure for increasing profitability inside of firms that are already quite profitable. And they are doing it with these back to the office or return to office initiatives that are not going very well with the workforce here in the U.S. And so Groundhog Day is a great way of saying it. I know we touch on this topic every time we've met the last couple of quarters, but no, it is not changing for the better quite yet in the U.S. And I also see that globally, and I know you do as well.
Yeah, I think that's not a big difference. It's true possibly across the globe, but it's still a general trend. It started with the change in interest rates, making money more expensive, and then shifting the focus on profitability since money wasn't free anymore, which it was quite a while. But that's now already 2 years ago that happened. And still, we still seem to be in the same phase. Yeah.
Yeah. We also see an economic trend here in the U.S. that just kicked off about a week and a half ago with the U.S. elections. So there's anticipated disruption coming. And I think most large companies are watching the preparation for the U.S.'s new president and what direction that's going to go and how it will affect the economy. Our stock market is at, I think, an all-time high and has been chugging along quite well. And inflation has stabilized, but is still high in some areas. But I think all of these disruptions, especially the election, are going to cause companies to be conservative and keep an eye on things going into Q1.
Yeah, interesting. Obviously, no one really knows what happens, but for sure, disruption might happen. Could be.
Yeah.
And let's see what happens. We have to watch and see. Wait and see. Let's move to the investor side. You already mentioned interest rates and money. So that, I think, leads us to the investment side. And an acquisition that, from my point of view, really stood out over the last weeks was the Siemens acquired Altair. And I think there are several interesting things to that. First of all, Siemens is not really the original software company, obviously, being what it is, but they not only paid $10 billion for Altair, which is a good amount of money, but also announced this is not the last acquisition of a software company. So they really try to get into or change their business model to be more digital, more selling software and digital services. So I think that's quite interesting. Altair primarily has engineering software, I think, so it's a good fit, obviously, to Siemens, but a small part of the business was in AI, so data science. They did several acquisitions of companies we tracked, starting with, for example, DataWatch and others. But one of them was RapidMiner, and it's quite well known in the data science community because it has an open source part and has a huge user base. And this was originally a German company. And then it changed headquarters to the U.S. with an U.S. investor, and then it got sold to Altair, and now it's back in Germany. So being in Germany here, obviously, I find that quite funny or interesting that it's now back in German hands.
Well, it's interesting. It will be interesting to watch their strategy evolve over the coming year if they're planning on making more purchases. And clearly, they're not afraid to write significant checks to get it done. So it's interesting to see where they'll go with that. And we see, you and I see quite a few firms that are doing sort of this collection of pieces and parts to more holistic views, especially around data and analytics and AI. I think it's a great time to have innovative AI tech, and I think a lot of companies are going to go out and buy that. And then with the RapidMiner stuff that's involved there, as you know, I was an executive at a data science workbench company called Statistica many years ago, and I used to get to compete against them, and they have a wonderful solution. So it makes sense to me that there was value in that through acquisition. So it sounds like a smart move.
Yeah, I think so. Surely, yeah. It's a good company, good software. So let's see what they make of it. I mean, sometimes companies like that don't really succeed in the software business because they have completely different DNA. But we'll see. I mean, it for sure is an important and interesting shift for Siemens. Overall, for sure. I have to say it was like a quiet quarter, quiet month. There was not too much happening. But I think one thing caught our attention that Thoma Bravo, the investor in Click, actually sold some of its shares. What do you make out of that?
You know, my personal opinion on it was that they've been invested there for quite some time. It's been a good investment for them. As we approach the end of a fiscal calendar year, it's quite possible that it was advantageous for them to pull some of that out of Click. But at the same time, they brought in new venture capitalists to the party and reinvested. So I think it's kind of a neutral event for Click. In the sense that they've made the change, but it can also end up being a good one, getting another round of funding. And we'll see what comes of it. But you're right, the general community here from an acquisition standpoint has been quiet during this quarter. We see some of the VCs doing some interesting things in the PE firms as well, but it's more of end of year shuffling about. And small rounds of funding. The AI companies are still magnets for funding, but still early stage funding, because not a lot of the AI firms have really crossed that line where they can demonstrate to private equity or venture capitalists that they deserve the next big round. But I do think going into 25, we'll see more activity around that segment, because that just makes sense with how exciting and hot the AI market is.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, a few months back, there was the acquisition of Zinea, the French data catalog, data governance vendor by HCL, which also owns Actium. So I think that, from my point of view, that's an interesting portfolio enhancement, you could say, or addition to the portfolio. And I mean, we don't want to comment on rumors here, but maybe we can say that there are lots of rumors about data catalog vendors in the market.
There are.
Might be acquired soon. And I'm sure till the end of the year, we definitely see some more M&A activity. Typically, that's where things are happening to basically finish these transactions before the end of the year is a typical pattern. And, I mean, the data cataloging market, we already commented on that, is definitely ripe for consolidation or for acquisitions because there are many, many vendors and larger platform vendors are interested in that technology. So let's see what happens. We will not mention anyone, but we would maybe bet that there might be one or two acquisitions in that market segment in the next month.
It reminds me of the consolidation that you and I saw years ago amongst all the data quality companies, the companies that specialize in that area of data. And there was a lot of innovation, a lot of companies surfaced, and then boom, They got bought up, they got integrated. I think we're in another loop of that. And I think data catalogs and data governance in general is driving it. And I think everybody understands that if you want to take advantage of this new AI wave, foundations around your data are absolutely critical. It's not really negotiable anymore. And so as companies' stacks become more complex, having centralized data catalogs is extremely valuable. So yeah, I think we'll see some interesting news in the next 6 to 8 weeks as we end the year and enter Q1.
Yeah. Let's look forward to that.
Yeah.
Sean, I think those were the biggest news we wanted to comment on. Anything else coming to mind?
No, I'm glad that you talked about the study. I was going to mention the Data for AI study. I'm one of the co-authors, so I'm excited about that project and looking forward to bringing it to the market along with Kevin Petrie. And it's a big topic here. Data and AI seems to be one of the biggest threads. And I do think that the agent technology stuff is going to be exciting to follow as we exit the year.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Sean, thanks for this one. We'll talk latest next quarter about the update. Looking forward to it. Bye-bye.
Good to see you. Bye-bye.